last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, our next guest has written a book about an unusual experience that she lived through. It's called Blasket Bond, Memoirs of an Island Caretaker. Leslie Bond, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Now, tell us a little bit of, well, how this book came about, in the sense of how did you end up living on the Blasket Islands?
Well, I began my journey to the Great Blasket, I suppose, as far back as I can remember. I can't remember a time that I didn't know about the Great Blasket Island or have an interest in it and its story. But I really got a chance to delve into that when I did my master's in Trinity and I looked into the living heritage of the Great Blasket Island. So its tradition, custom, folklore, language. And that was in 2018. As part of that, I was able to visit the island, get to know it a bit better. And then I suppose it was a bit of serendipity. The year after the job vacancy was advertised, probably about 9 months after I'd visited.
What job vacancy?
So the job vacancy was, as I said in the Facebook ad, a couple wanted for long-term caretaking position on the Great Blasket Island. So it was a picture of this beautiful island landscape. It popped up on my feed on the commute home and I said, I think this might be for us. So I rang my now husband, then boyfriend, and thankfully he was willing to let me apply and we got the job.
Okay. What was he doing at the time that he went along with this?
I know. So we were both public servants. Gordon was happy in his job. I was working with the National Library with the Seamus Heaney exhibition, a job I loved, my other dream job. So it was, I mean, it was a decision that had to be made. We weren't, you know, walking away from things that we could leave behind easily. But I think, you know, gut feelings are hard to come by these days. And we were pretty certain this was the right call. So Gordon took a career break. I had to leave my job. It was a temporary exhibition at the time. So I didn't have the option of just taking a break. But I kind of knew it was the right thing to do. I knew I had to go.
And what was involved in it?
So I suppose it's a busy job with lots of moving parts in it, as you can imagine, on an abandoned island. There's no hot water or electricity, but you're looking after the cafe and island accommodation. So that involves the like day-to-day greeting the guests, getting the kettles boiled, welcoming them in for a cup of tea, and three cottages at the time, it was three cottages, turning them over, beds changed, stoves ready to go, houses cleaned down, and doors open about 10:30, 11 every day. And, you know, at the height of the season, you're looking at maybe a couple of hundred people arriving across the Sound.
And do they pitch tents?
Some do. The year we were there, not many. Most people come for a few hours and enjoy the view and I think head back to the mainland for maybe a more comfortable night's sleep. But we did, there were some people who did camp overnight. I think we had one man who camped at the back of the island. He walked all the way to the far end. So yeah, maybe a slightly more extreme experience of the Blasket.
When was the last time that people lived there permanently?
The island was permanently evacuated in 1953. That was when the last of the islanders made the move to the mainland. But it had been in steady decline for quite a while by that point. Although interestingly, I actually saw the 1926 census obviously came out this week and it showed a really, you know, healthy and nearly thriving population. And, you know, it wasn't long after that that the island went into decline.
And why was that?
There's a multitude of reasons for it and you can't pin it on one. But I suppose if you think about the timing of it, it was a new state. There was economic fragility. I suppose like attention was turned elsewhere and these islands off the west coast, they were kind of at the brunt of it. They were cut off from the mainland. They were just that bit more removed. They were facing increasing poor weather conditions, being left when they had medical need, no access to infrastructure. And I think globalization played a huge part in it. Young people were starting to hear back from people who were in America, who were sending word back about the life they were leading. Even people who'd moved maybe further inland, not across the Atlantic by any stretch, but I think they started to see that there may be a better or easier life out there. But they all spoke about their love for their island until the time they left it. You know, it stayed with them their whole lives. It wasn't an easy decision to leave.
Yeah, electrification came late to parts of Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
Did it get to the islands at all? No.
No, it never made it to the Great Blasket. They were without electricity. And as were we didn't have electricity either. So it has never crossed the Blasket Sound. And that is what made it challenging. They did have a radio signal, but it was very temperamental and they didn't have consistent access.
Where are you from?
I'm from Kildare.
Okay, so it's very different growing up in Kildare and living in Kildare to been out on the Great Blasket. When you don't have the electricity, when you have to find other ways to boil a kettle for a bit of hot water, what's that like?
I've actually thought about it. What I find most unusual is that it's such an immersive experience. You have to give yourself over to it. You know, having no hot water and no electricity very much situates you in a place as soon as you set foot in it. I found it harder to adjust to having it back. When I remember leaving the island and coming back to the mainland, walking into rooms and being in them for a few seconds before I realised I could turn a light switch on. And you have to give yourself into the island and find your step with it and move with the rhythm of it. And I think the island teaches you how to live there. And that's the beauty of it. You're only there for a short time, but you're totally immersed in it. And you get over it. Now, you never get used to the cold water. The cold showers will never be easy, but the electricity was okay.
Okay. And then, were you ever left the two of you on your own on the island, or were there always people coming to visit?
We got time on our own when the boat stopped sailing. So if there was bad weather or wind conditions stopped boats landing at the mooring, we would get a few days. That was how we got our days off. So we would always welcome guests, but you wouldn't mind, you know, a bit of a storm coming in. But we actually experienced two red level warnings while we were there. So the beginning and the end. So I think both times we had about 4 days alone on the island, which was very special. It's a rare privilege to get to spend time alone on an island like that.
And what was it like when you got the red warning level weather in the island? How bad is it? Can you hunker down and what are you watching?
It literally is like battening the hatches. But it's a totally different experience to the mainland. So here you're thinking about, will the electricity go? Will the roof, will a tree land on the roof? How will I get to work in the morning? I had none of that to worry about. We didn't have electricity to lose. Those houses have stood facing the Atlantic for more than a century. They weren't going anywhere. So you really just got to sit down, light the stove, make a cup of tea, look out and literally watch a storm make landfall. It is the most unique and privileged position to be in, to see the clouds come in and to experience the change in the landscape. And, you know, the island actually would tell you first that something was happening. You'd see the birds disappear. The grass would start to move, like you'd see it toss out across the fields. The seals would either leave the strand or go out to sea. And I used to say there was kind of a smell in the air. There was almost like an ozone scent. Something changed. The pressure changed. And to watch it come in and see the clouds move over Dunquin and move out towards Dingle and know that it was coming for the mainland, but we just got to sit back and watch it move. It was great.
And what was it like, just the two of you been there without other people? What did that do for your relationship? It must have been good, given that you got married afterwards.
Yeah, we were able to face the test, but I think it made us closer. I suppose you get to see your partner in a different way. You know, it's a very unique experience to be in that type of position and to rely on each other that way. You know, you're dependent on them for so much, but I think it showed me that we have a very good balance. Gordon would recognise when I was a bit tired, I'd see when he might need to just take a quick break. And it becomes a very symbiotic relationship when you're that dependent on each other to get through what is a very unique experience. You know by the end of it if you're in for the long haul, and thankfully we lasted.
Yeah, but you didn't, there was no illness or anything that you had to worry about, was there?
No, and we were very lucky. We got through those 6 months without any incident or illness. It would be a totally different situation if you did. Now the Coast Guard are incredible, they're there, and we didn't have the experience that the Islanders would have had, where, you know, illness to them meant something totally different. We were well connected all the time. If we needed help, we would get it quite easily.
If you'd been given the opportunity, would you have stayed for longer than 6 months?
I think at the time I was probably ready to leave, but not in a sense that I was tired of it. It was a very unusual thing to live that close with the seasons. So we arrived in spring. You could see the light changing, the summer coming in. You built up to that busy period and people arriving and the boats coming. And then you start to feel it wind down, the light leaving earlier in the day. So we left on the 6th of October and we had come through that lovely sunny peak, and I found myself, as much as I wanted to stay, I was ready to go. But that is the story of the Great Blasket. You know, people have lived there, they've loved their time there, and they've left, and we were part of that story. So it felt right to leave. And you know, going into it, you can't stay forever, and to stay any longer, you'd be putting other people out. You'd have boatmen coming over to you at times when they would rather not be out at sea. So it was time to go, and we were okay with leaving.
Yeah, how long does it take to get from the Great Blasket into the mainland?
So you can go to a few different points. The main routes are Dingle to the Blasket or Dunquin. Dunquin is quite quick. It's about 20 minutes, I think. Dingle can be, I think, anything from about half an hour to an hour, depending on what speed you go and what you look at on the way. But when you get to the island, you have to tranship. So the boat moors and then you get into a dinghy and that brings you to the slipway and then you're on the island. So it's not, it's, it really is kind of a pilgrimage of sorts. It's not as simple as pulling up to a pier and stepping off. You really have to make the journey. The islanders used to say they went into the island, not onto the island. And when you do it, you really see what they mean. You really feel like you're going underneath the island to get up onto it.
Have you been back since?
Yes, we have. We went back in 2021. We got engaged when we were there, which was lovely, a nice little addition to the story. And then we've been back a few times since, and it's always lovely to go back.
So tell us the book. What are you trying to achieve with the book? What do you think will readers get out of it?
I hope it gives some insight into what life is like on the Great Blasket in the 21st century. No one lives there permanently, but it's a rare thing to get to be in a place like that the way we were. I had to consider the way I was going to write it. Was it going to be day one I arrived, day 300 I left? But what I decided to do instead was take elements of our life there. So what readers will find is the breathing shore, the life and the wildlife and the nature we encountered, the walks and routes that take you around the island. And I know when I was studying the Great Blasket and I hadn't been there before, I wanted to just feel I was in it because it is a tricky place to get to and not everyone will be there. So I hope what readers will feel is some sense of being able to step away from the world a bit and what it might feel like to spend a bit of time just out there with the Atlantic.
And had you ever done PEG in school?
No, crucially, I did not do PEG in school. And I think that might be why I have a lovely relationship with PEG. I have no problem with PEG.
I'm from the generation where PEG was compulsory for Leaving Cert Irish. The story of PEG Sayers, a tale of woe.
I mean, the woman had a hard life.
She
and
did.
I think what I always say, though, when people say, oh, God, PEG. And people would come to the door of the cafe and say, which house is PEG's? And nearly go out and shake their fist at it. And what I would say is...
Is that house still there?
It is. So it's actually one of the houses you can stay in.
Wasn't the one you lived in, though?
We lived next door. So we would get it ready for guests who were staying. Peg lived in two houses on the island. She lived in one of the ruined cottages that's gone now. And her family were moved up to the congested district board houses in the early 1900s. But I always say, just give her another look. This, the version people read in school was a bit, I suppose, devoid of her humour. And it doesn't really take into account just how tough her life was. And the fact that she was kind of able to laugh and tell stories all through it. She was very charismatic. She definitely deserves another go, I think.
Well, I think people will give this a go first. It's Blasket Bound, Memoirs of an Island Caretaker. Leslie Bond, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Matt.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.